It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you listening in. We're here till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up at 11 o'clock. My guest tonight, riding shotgun for the first half, Rick Cogan.
The short show.
The Rick Cogan. It's a short
show.
You
and I are the two guys who are most beleaguered by the sensation that is
the Chicago
Black.
All the time, right?
All the time. Yeah.
Rick Cogan of WGN and Chicago Tribune fame. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure,
Appreciate
Justin.
It.
Always, always.
Let's talk about a couple things. We'll talk about the work that you got coming out this Sunday, but also, you know, you
the work that I had last Sunday.
Last Sunday, about Studs Terkel and the archive over at WFMT.
Well, this is an effort by WFMT in conjunction with the History Museum and a couple other places, the Library of Congress, to finally digitize every single one of the, listen to this, radio host, 5,600 shows that Studs Terkel did.
5,600.
And I'm very flattered to be a guest on your show, but the kind of people Studs had on his show were, Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King.
Unbelievable.
The young Woody Allen. Every significant figure, I would hazard to say, of the last half of the 20th century did Studs' show.
And they would sit down, and it wasn't sort of like, hey, tell us about your new movie. I mean, Studs Terkel would get deep with these guys. I mean,
No question.
I've been able to hear a lot of this stuff and be a part of it. These are not just sort of like fluffy, you know, the kind of, we sat down in a hotel room for 5 minutes with the young Woody Allen. These are hour-long.
Dr. King, what have you been up to? What's your last march?
Yeah. Tell us about your new movie.
Yeah, right? What's your new march? Where are you going?
No, but these were significant pieces of journalism.
No question, and that's the value of the archive, because I think this is an astonishing historical document. I think right now there are kids in grammar schools across the country who are using these Studs interviews. And you see, he did some remotes too, going down to Selma for the marches, going to China, going to Russia, that these kids, new generation, is using as foundation for further exploration of these issues that he talked about. I'll give you and your listeners one great example. There is an interview that Studs did with the 21-year-old Bob Dylan that is one of the most stunning pieces of anything I've ever heard. Dylan's in the studio. Second album's come out, obviously being introduced to the Chicago audience for the first time. And Studs is like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, he looks like he's a young Huckleberry Finn. If Huckleberry Finn lived in the 20th century.
That's a good impression.
Not bad. There are not many people who still do Studs. And he says, now, Bob, could you play? Could you play a little something for me? And there's Dylan, reluctant to play, saying, well, you know, you got it on the disc. You could play it on the disc, meaning an LP. You know, it's on the disc. It's a long song. But I want to hear it. I want to see you play. And Dylan, finally, reluctantly, you hear him taking his guitar out of his guitar case, and then you listen to him play A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall live in the studio, perhaps
impromptu,
among the best versions I've ever heard of that great song. And then they talk about it. And Studs is like, it's about the atomic rain. And then, well, not really. It's more about how newspapers, about the stuff that newspapers and radio tell you that is not the truth. And I'm like, oh,
that's so awesome.
It is. I mean, it is awesome. Anybody can go to right now to studsterkel.org, and you'll be led to not only this Kickstarter campaign they've started, because they've only digitized.
They've got to digitize it.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of the stuff. I mean, you're talking about either CDs or cassette tapes or reel-to-reel and that kind of stuff.
It's all real. Most of it was
reel-to-reel.
Most of it's reel-to-reel. And they've got to digitize, and the Library of Congress is doing so. There's a Kickstarter campaign. But also, if you go to this studsterkel.org, you will also be led to something called the Pop-Up Archive that has more than 400 of these already available for
There's
listening.
Also, you know, in addition to an interview with Bob Dylan, there's an interview with a young Rick Cogan.
Very young.
I want to play some of it. What, this is 1978?
78. I'll set this up by telling you there's also available out there one of the other shows that is a personal. Three of the biggest influences on my life are in the studio at the same time in 1967 when my father, Herman Cogan, the then young new columnist Mike Royko, hijacked Studs' show. They took over his show. Studs is like flabbergasted in order
to
interview.
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, Studs does still do most of the talking. But to interview Studs about the publication that day that day in 1967 of his first best-selling oral history, Division Street America.
Unbelievable. And
I mean, for me, it's haunting, but it's also fascinating.
Well, let's take a listen to your interview. This is what we have, young Rick Cogan.
It may start with Studs always played music. He played a ton of music.
The Wynn Strachey singing that song, I suppose, brings reflections to you, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. I think I remember Wynn Strachey sitting on our back porch summer evenings belting that song out over all of the 43rd Ward, for that matter. And I think also the first saloon I was ever in, tiny boy, was Patty Baller's old saloon at North and Sedgwick. And Patty, of course, was a famous Chicago Ain't Ready for Reform alderman. Yeah.
But that's where you were born, and in that area there. How has that ward and the area which you were born changed?
Oh, I think it's changed as dramatically as any area in the city. When I was growing up in what was then the Old Town Triangle, before there was that explosion of psychedelia on Wells Street, there were a couple old antique stores, no night spots, few restaurants. I remember I knew something was changing there when I was 16 years old and went in a store called the Manatees and bought a pair of bell-bottom pants, which my mother and father were sort of appalled at. They said, what kind of child are you becoming? And now, of course, I've seen Wells Street come and go, and now it's time for Renaissance down there, I think.
There you go, young Rick Cogan with Studs Terkel.
Yeah, listen to the way I talked. I mean, it's like, that's really me? That's really, I was still in my 20s. It was in honor of the publication of that fabulous, incredibly hard-to-find book, Dr. Nightlife.
One of the
Chicago.
Best books ever. A friend of mine has that book, by the way. So
it's a classic.
It's a classic.
And the weird thing, go online, try to buy it, ladies and gentlemen, because there's some goof, and I need to call him who's selling it, a copy, for something like $7,000. And I get, that's way more than I ever made writing the book. But it was Studs. I mean, it was a treat to be on.
It's, you know, for you, I mean, obviously being close to Studs Terkel, even to his last days.
All the way.
It's hard to fathom whether or not Chicago or the country or the world will ever see another Studs Terkel.
Can't be. He was on the radio, Justin, from 1952 to 1997.
Unbelievable.
Interviewing, again, 5 days a week, every single person coming to town. He did a lot of people over and over again. Royko, he did a number of times. But it's also a combination. It's not just celebrity interviews. It's those ordinary people, the so-called ordinary people that form the basis of his oral histories. It is an astonishing thing. And the kids, these three nice young producers at WFMT who are listening to every one of these things, are just overwhelmed. One knew who Studs was. The other two are
really
too young to have ever heard him.
Oh, man. One of my favorite memories working at WBEZ is I got to produce some of Studs Terkel stuff at the end.
Well, one of the great things about BEZ, they have in the studio there, they have that
the bust
of
yeah.
Studs. When I worked there for a short time, I would always, in breaks, I would say, Studs, how am I doing? How am I doing? Like, hey, Rick, you're doing okay.
Buzz.
You're doing okay.
Rick Cogan, Chicago Tribune and WGN, talking about Studs Terkel. You can find all the information at studsterkel.org. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what you have in store for this weekend in the paper. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Rick Cogan. The show is 11 o'clock on Sundays, right? 10 o'clock?
9 to 11.
9 to 11.
9 to 11 when there are no Hawks games sometimes, and it's 10 to 11. Sometimes it's 9 to nothing.
That's a tough thing.
It works for me. I mean, I certainly understand the public's fascination justifiable with the Blackhawks.
No,
why
unbelievable.
Not? And now 5 more years.
5 more years here at WGN. And that's right. That's just today.
That
all right,
means
so
we may still have jobs for
right.
5 more years.
That's over. The gravy train that is the Blackhawks. All right, so let's talk about Sunday. So you talk about the, you know, Sunday's going to be a big night because it's live, it's Grease. They're bringing Grease to the television. It's a new thing where everybody's got to bring classics to live television.
6 o'clock on Fox. What occurred to me is there's a very big piece in Vanity Fair this mm-hmm. month about the movie. Ooh, the movie was made. How the movie was made. Big piece in the New York Times last Sunday. Another piece this week in USA Today. The last two, the Vanity Fair piece gives the origins of the play, one paragraph. The other two pieces give it nothing. You wouldn't know who wrote it or where it started.
And it started here in Chicago. It was a big, big part. The whole play started here in Chicago. It got so hot, it went to Broadway. But there's a lot of turmoil around this play and what it was in Chicago.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this, I mean, if you look back and study the history of Chicago theater, the success of Grease was, to my mind, the big bang of what became the legendary off-loop theater scene here. In the wake of Grease, there comes David Mamet, there comes Body Politic, there comes The Organic. It really started, and it is certifiably the biggest hit ever produced in Chicago.
Absolutely.
By far, it's part of the culture. One of the funny things, it's been a generational thing. It's 1971, it started here, then it went to Broadway. It was, until a chorus line beat it, the longest-running play in the history of Broadway. Amazing. Then the movie comes out. There's another generation that takes the movie. Then the movie's re-released in 98, another generation. And I'll tell you this. My daughter, Fiona, is 11 years old. I don't know if she's seen a commercial. I don't know what it is. She goes, Dad, do you know anything about this movie, Grease? It looks so much fun. I want to watch it. And whether it's good or bad, you know, the songs are good enough to grab this generation.
Well, the Chicago play, I mean, the play that was in the early 70s, you know, it was a little bit more, it was an off-loop production. It was a little darker. It was a little bit more of a, it was a little bit more of a, I don't know.
It was darker.
Right, where Greasers,
well,
it was,
you know, what Grease is now is, you know, three quarters music and sort of one quarter story.
Right.
Then it was mostly story with a few songs in there. There were one woman who I interviewed, a woman named Polly Penn, who was a junior in high school when she was cast in the production of Grease there. She hid the script from her parents while they were in rehearsals because there were too many dirty words in the script. Then it became a hit, and her lovely mother, Yvonne Penn, said, well, Polly, at least the reviews are good. And they were good, but no one involved in the play, not even Jim Jacobs, who wrote it with Warren Casey, anybody could have anticipated the success.
There was some, I guess, consternation over the fact of going to Broadway, and they didn't bring everybody with them. There were, you know, their actors, and that happens. But that sort of, like, that story comes with it, the lore of the idea that it wasn't the Chicago production that ultimately had success on Broadway.
Right. Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey rewrote the show at the behest of two very lucky people who said, hey, we'd like to produce your show and
we'll
bring
give
it
some
to
money,
Broadway.
Yeah.
I think there's a modest amount of disappointment, but these were basically two actors went, Mary Lou Henner and a guy named Jim Canning. Polly Penn, the woman I was just talking about, she might have gone, but she says, as she says in my Sunday story, she goes, well, but I decided to go to college instead.
Right.
I think many of the actors here were disappointed not to be asked.
Right.
That's all.
And that happens a lot. That's not specific to Grease.
This isn't like being in the first Star Wars,
right,
where you have, like, right, you want a piece of the action. And they've all stayed relatively friendly. I talked to Gary Houston, who's been a great person on the theater scene here.
Yeah.
The cool story, the gist of Grease is it's a love story, right?
Mm-hmm.
The best part of it, and I'm giving away my Sunday story, but the best part of it is Gary Houston, who played Roger, the mooning king of Rydell High, and Hedda Lubin, who played Frenchie, the beauty school dropout, met during rehearsal doing Grease. They have been together, man and wife, ever since.
Wow.
That's a cool part of the whole thing.
It's
so
great.
What do they have to resent?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think about those times. I mean, I have family connection because my uncle Guy Burrill was the director.
Sure,
they
loved
him.
Yeah, they love him.
So it's amazing to think about that show and its impact, because you're right. I mean, it really was the beginning of what is considered a Chicago theater.
Sure. There was no Steppenwolf. There were none of these things. The other great thing about it, I talked to Jim Jacobs. Warren Casey sadly died of AIDS. Talk to Jim Jacobs, who has made uncounted millions of dollars about this. And I've known Jim over the years, and I said, why are you letting them do this? I mean, the female star is Sandy. Is like, she's famous for being on Dancing with the Stars. And I'm like, come on. He goes, well, Rick, I fought him off for a year, and then a la Don Corleone, they made me an offer I just couldn't
of
refuse.
Of course they did.
I couldn't refuse. He had nothing. And during the whole to do with this, there have been no text messages, no phone calls. It's just, we're doing what we do. And he says, when you sell something, You got to let it go.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's a big part of it.
There have been 123,000 theatrical productions of Grease over the years.
Wow.
I know. It was called El Vaselino in Mexico.
Well, when you watch it this weekend on Fox at 6 o'clock, remember that this whole story, everything about that, that what you're watching,
that's
started
wrote,
in Chicago.
That's why I wrote this story, to just remind people, because it's now such a ingrained part of the culture that people forget where it started.
Well,
and some of the people who were in it are just terrific people.
Great idea for a story. Rick Kogan, that's going to be in the Chicago Tribune this Sunday.
You can get it online.
You can always get
When's
it
When's the show on? When are we on now? What day is it?
Is
it Thursday?
It's Thursday, yeah.
It's Thursday. Probably online as we are speaking, and certainly online tomorrow.
There you go. Rick, always
Grease
a pleasure.
Grease is the
man.
Word, my
Grease
friend.
Is the Grease word.